Yeah, good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming out. Nice to see so many of you here today. I realized that because of my personal situation at the time when Rav Lichtenstein passed away, I don't think I ever did really a full-on series on who Rav Lichtenstein was as a person and also on his philosophy. And he was an extraordinarily prolific writer. There are books here in our Beis Medrash, and there's a number of articles that have been published online as well that describe and that were written by him in his philosophy on various major issues that still affect the Jewish people. His articles are nuanced, but also one of the challenges is that his writing style tends to be obtuse. His language is academic. And because of his, he recognizes the complexity of every issue, he often will write an extraordinarily lengthy article, and that also prevents people from really learning his philosophy and his perspective on things. So one of my ideas was to take his articles and break them down into smaller shiurim in order for people to kind of gain greater understanding. So this first article I've taken is from Leaves of Faith, Volume 1. The title of the article was Why Learn Gemara? And it was in a response to the question, which is that a number of students in yeshiva high schools and certainly in colleges and even amongst adults have shied away from Talmudic study. It's too hard, it's too complicated. It focuses on mundane details rather than on grander issues. And perhaps we should be spending our time better studying philosophy, theology, practical halacha. All those things would be better uses of our time. That's the question. And so he deals with the issue, again, with its usual nuance. And so I wanted to summarize some of his discussions there through the sources that he quotes. So number one, he notes, is that the study of the oral law is itself the greatest achievement for a Jewish person. It starts with the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Samach Amud Beis. The Gemara says as follows, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, Lo karas bris im Yisraela, ela bishvil dvarim shabal peh. That the Hashem only made a covenant with the Jewish people for the sake of the oral law, meaning what's discussed in the Gemara, Shnemar, Ki al pia dvarim ha'ila karati oscha itcha bris ve'es Yisrael. For the basis of these matters, I have made this covenant with you. So we see here that basically the study of Torah Shebaal Peh is essential to the covenant that the Jewish people have formed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you go all the way back to Har Sinai, when Hashem says to the Jewish people, hey, listen, I want to make a deal with you guys. You follow my laws, and I will be your God. That deal was sealed under the assumption that people would study, or that the Jewish people would study the oral law. Not only that, when we're talking about prioritizing things, there's the very fascinating Rashi right at the beginning of Bereshis, the first Rashi in the Torah, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rashi says, in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak, Lo haya tzarich lahatchila sa Torah, ela me'achodesh hazeh lachem. The Torah should have started with ha'chodesh hazeh lachem. Why? She mitzvah rishona shenetzavu by Yisrael. This was the first mitzvah that the Jewish people were ever commanded. Umatam pasach b'breishis. Why did it start in Breishis? Mishum koch ma'asav yigid l'amon l'aseis lem nachlas goyim. Rashi says that basically there's a technical reason why it started with Breishis and not the first mitzvah. And he says that the reason is shim yom rom umos ha'olam l'Yisrael listenim atem, that if the nations of the world say that you are thieves because you stole the land of Israel, so Hashem, we're going to answer that God created the world and he can give the land to whoever he so chooses. But clearly Rashi says that the Torah was given for the purpose of the study of mitzvos. That if you're looking for what is the meat and what is the potatoes of the Torah meal, the meat is the study of mitzvos and the study of the oral law. And the potatoes would be everything else that's involved. Rabbeinu Bachya, in his comment where he discusses this Rashi, he confirms this. V'akavana lumar, Rashi's intent is to say is ki kevan shamitzvot hein ikar haTorah, since the mitzvot are the primary or the main part of the Torah, lo haya ra'ui lios pesach dvareha shel Torah ki im b'mitzvah. The opening, the introduction to the discussion of Torah should have been with mitzvot. And not only that, but even in moments when we gather all of the Jewish people together, the priority is not the discussion of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Think of it, we don't do that today, right? People come to shul, and what do you get when you come to shul? You get drush, right? You get discussions of morality, of ethics, of philosophy. You know, you interpret a Rashi here, you interpret a Rashi there. But there was an event called Hakel. At Hakel, right after the Shemitah year, so what would happen? Everyone would gather in Yerushalayim, and they would learn Torah. So what Torah would be learned in Jerusalem? You know, would the Kohen Gadol stand up there, would the king stand up there and give a drasha on Avraham, on Yitzchak, on Yaakov? Would he wax philosophical on what Hashkacha Pratis means? Would he discuss how we could become better people and improve ourselves and stop speaking Lashon Hara? Maybe. But look how the Rambam describes it. The Rambam in the Laws of Chagiga, Perek Gimel, where he discusses the issue of Hakel, says as follows. Mitzvas aseh lehakil kol Yisrael anashim v'nashim v'taf. It's a positive commandment to gather all of the people, men, women, and children. B'chol motzei shmita, right at the end of a shmita, ba'alotam l'regel, when they come on aliyah l'regel, sukkah's time, v'likros me'oznehem min ha'torah. And we should read for them portions, or read in their ears, portions of the Torah. Parshio shein mizarzos osan b'mitzvos u'mizchazkos yedehem b'das ha'emes. What should we do? We should read them parshios that will encourage them to be more meticulous in the performance of mitzvos and in their belief. Shenemar, as it says in Devarim, miket sheva shanim b'mo'et shnas ha'shmitah b'chag ha'sukos, Bevokal Yisrael Lereaos, at the end of Shemitah, when all of Israel comes to see, or comes on Aliyah L'Regel, Hakel Tza'am Anashim Anashim Ba'Taf, V'Gercha Asher B'Sharecha. Everyone should come. All right, beautiful. So here on Motzei Shemitah, at the time of Hakel, we're supposed to gather all of the Jewish people together in this one singular place for this one singular experience, where they're going to learn Torah, and that Torah learning, the Rambam says, is going to inspire them to do more mitzvot and to become better believers in the true religion. So what are we teaching them? If you go only a few halachos ahead in that same perek, the Rambam says, V'geirim she'enem makirim chayavim lachim libam lakshiv oznam lishmo be'ema v'yira v'gila b'rada kiyom shenitna b'sinai. They need to listen as if it's the day that they were on Har Sinai. Afil chacham gedolim, even great people. Sorry, I skipped the kol haTorah kula chayavin lishmoa. Sorry, I skipped the halacha that the Rambam says it earlier. I put the wrong one on the source sheet. But the Rambam on the source sheet, when he discusses it, he says, "What are you going to do? Are you going to teach them Shema? Are you going to teach them Vahaya? You teach them, you know, these spiritual statements?" The answer is no. What we do is we go through the parts of Devarim, Shoftim, Kiseitze, Kisavo, with all the very technical laws that are written there on how to build a Jewish society. Those are the laws that we teach them, not the more philosophical discussions. So once again, we see here that in terms of priority, in terms of what it is that we're supposed to be teaching people in order to encourage them to be more spiritually consistent, to be more spiritually committed, what we choose to teach them is specifically the mitzvos, and even that, the intricacies of the mitzvos over everything else.
So dogma.
Not dogma. We teach them halacha. We teach them interpretive method. Okay. That doesn't mean, by the way, that the only thing you should be learning is like the particularities of mitzvos. Meaning, Gemara, when we talk about it, is a very broad thing. Look here, the Sifri, Parshas Ekev, Yud Aleph. So it says, Shelo tomar lamati halachos daily. Person shouldn't say, I've learned, you know, halachos, and that's enough for me. Tamu lomar kim shamor tishmeru et kol ha-mitzvah azos, kol mitzvah lamod. What should you do? You should learn the entirety of the mitzvah. What does that mean? Midrash, halachos, agados, v'chein hu omer, lemano diacha, ki lo alalachem levado yichya adam, ki amotza pi Hashem, yichya adam, elu halachos v'agados. So number one, we get a number of things out of this sifri. Number one is, you shouldn't say, I know what to do, right? That's all I want to know. I know, you know how to put on my tefillin. I know how to say Kiddush. I know how to keep Shabbos. I know how not to speak Lashon Hara. You shouldn't say that, but you should say that I want to learn the entirety or the wholeness or the completion of the mitzvah. How does one learn the wholeness or the completion of the mitzvah? It means you learn medrash, it means you learn the halachos that are associated with it, the agados that are associated with it, all of them, because lo al alechem levado, you don't survive, man doesn't survive by bread alone. You need other things. So therefore, you need the wholeness and the completion of the mitzvah. So that doesn't mean, so Gemara is one area where you get the entirety of the experience of the mitzvah. Right? Anyone who's ever learned a Gemara knows that you're going to have intricate discussions of the source of something. You're going to have the discussion of the Makor. You're going to have a discussion of how these various halachos are applied, how its application might relate to the source. And you're also going to get agadot. You're going to get stories and kind of more, even more fantastical interpretations that are related to that halacha or that mitzvah. And so it's going to give you a broader sense of what the mitzvah is. Next source number six, Gemara Bava Basra, Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis. Kira quotes from Zera, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav, Mai Dichtiv Kol Yemei Oni Ra'im, Zeb Bal Gemara, V'tov Lei Mishteh Tamid, Zeb Bal Mishnah. So here's where we face the real problem with the Gemara. What is the real problem with the Gemara? Gemara is hard. Rabbi Zera says, Kol Yemei Ani Ra'im, right? All the days of a poor person are horrible, are terrible. What does that mean? Gemara, right? But Tov Lev Mishteh Tamid, what is it, you know, when do you have like a good-hearted, you know, hearty experience and happy experience? That's if you're learning Mishnah. What's the difference between a Mishnah and a Gemara? The Mishnah tells you, don't do this, do this. It doesn't give you really any reasons for why you should or shouldn't do anything. It just kind of makes its statements. Gemara, on the other hand, what does it require you to do? It requires you to invest. It requires you to interpret. It requires you to bang your head against the wall. It requires you to think creatively about things. It requires you to explore mundane or seemingly mundane details. It requires you to explore intricacies. And the Rashbam says, when he's explaining this Gemara of Rav Zera, he says, "Shememisatz molachavin hilchos l'tarei tzavayos." Says, why is Gemara so challenging? Because a person memisatzmo, a person kills himself, right? Trying to explain all of the halachos, and to explain every hava mina and every teretz and every interpretation and every different different move and shake of the Gemara. This is confirmed, by the way. It's amazing that the Rishonim people, you know, the Rashbam dwelled in the Gemara. He's one of the Balei HaTosfos. He dwelled in the Gemara, and even though he wrote a fine commentary on the Chumash, his primary form of study was Talmudic study, but even the Rashbam is saying that Gemara is challenging. And in one of the most fascinating sources, which I found actually because of this article by Rav Lichtenstein, is a statement of Rav Aaron Alevi of the Ra'ah. The Rav Aaron Alevi, the Ra'ah, in his in the Mishnah on this commentary. So he says as follows: Kaz of Rabbeinu Hakadosh. HaMishnah, v'liyos hadas nesuna shilim medo asasur dura, v'tiye b'fi kol shigura, v'gam alea yetzu asakim, svarot rabot v'dikdukim. He's speaking here of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, he says, hadas netuna, right, we all know that it's clear, it's organized, everyone can memorize it very easily, it's actually written in a way that lends itself to memorization. And he says on it you can make all sorts of different interpretations, but upon it nivne aleha Talmud Bavli, upon it what is written, the Babylonian Talmud. The Babylonian Talmud is written on it, and what does he say? Shehem mayim amukim, they are deep waters. Dvarim ne'elamim ve'arukim. It is things which are obscure and long and lengthy. Ad shekira'uhu hachachamim mechashkim. Until the wise men refer to it as mechashkim, as something that darkens, right? It's like walking in a fog of darkness. V'rov harotzin lehikanetz matzu daltav ne'ulot. And most of the people who try to enter into this world of Talmudic study have found the doors locked to them. Zulati lichidim midoros skulos, excluding some individuals in special generation. Vikasav alav svarim enkates, and people have written books to no end on it. Vilag harbe yigias basar, and they have expended much of their flesh working on it. Chomag voha shel dalsayim uvriach, and they've built great walls filled with doors. Umigdal oz niftzar, and great towers. Vehatalmim ya'ifim yatsud dichufim, and the students, they exit exhausted and broken down. Tachlosh da'atan merov hamasava hamatan, and what happens? Their minds become weakened from the give and take of the Talmudic study. V'ani, and me, the Ra'a, is saying, one of the great commentaries on the Talmud, says, V'ani bir osi ki ay giyah rabba. And he says, when I see how difficult and challenging it is, V'ha'gemara sogeret umitzugeret, and the Talmud is closed and sealed, V'ein yotze v'ein ba, no one can come or go, Chibarti sefer kirasiv nezer hakodesh al derech ha'gemara. So he says, I wrote this special book called Nezer HaKodesh on the path of the Gemara. Uvirarti midivrei rabosai shita achas ubrura. And basically based on the teachings of my teachers, I wrote a clear interpretation. B'chol sefer lakachti shita achas miyuchedes v'lo tarachiti l'dchos svara nifsedes. Basically, what have I done? I've taken one opinion, and I've sifted out all the other ones, so you don't have to get involved in it. Kol zed archei ha-talmud ne'alamamim b'chutam tzar stumim v'chol dvarim yigeim v'ein ha-kol zochim li'osam yomam v'layla kvuim. He says, I did this because the words of the Talmud are so obscure, so challenging, so difficult to understand, and not everyone is zocha, not everyone is privileged to be able to enter it, to enter into it. And because of the difficulty of their time, they don't have the time to spend on it. V'yesh rabim tzrichim dvarim k'tzarim, many people, they need short things. U'psakim misudarim, they need clear piske halacha. Yisuchim b'ineim ya'iru k'sapirim. And so this will help them, and it will shine like sapphires. So here you see one of the great commentators, the Ra'a, basically recognizing how challenging and difficult it is. So for all we're saying, right, let's just summarize where we've come until now. So we started out pointing out that the study or the interpretation of mitzvot is the primary in Torah. And that primary in Torah comes out in the study of the Talmud. And yet, what happens? Very, very few people, or there's always this movement to reject the study of the Talmud. Although, interestingly enough, Rav Lichtenstein, when he wrote this article, there was movement away from Talmudic study, and now it seems to be on the rise again, that people are re-embracing the Talmud. Interestingly enough, one of the innovations of the early Zionists was to reject the Talmud in favor of Tanakh study, because the feeling was that the Talmud was a very kind of exile type of experience, whereas Tanakh study was embracing Jewish independence, etc. But now, interestingly enough, you have the alternative. You go to the land of Israel, and there are all these Batei Midrash Lechilonim. You have study halls for non-religious Jews to sit and study Talmud and understand its inner workings. So it seems to be to be on the rise again. But nevertheless, there's an importance in terms of encouraging people to return to the Talmud and see what it has to offer. But nevertheless, the reason there's a movement to teach less Talmud to students is because it's very, very challenging. It's challenging. It requires an immense amount of time. And I'll tell you this personally as a teacher. To teach a halacha, right, I could teach 40 halachas in the time it takes me to teach you know, half an amud of Gemara. And that half an amud of Gemara, chances are fairly high, they won't learn anything practical in their lives. Right? What am I teaching today? I'm teaching Maseches Avodah Zarah. So fine, it's a wonderful Masechta to teach, and it has practical ramifications. So what did I spend the last 3 days on? I spent the last 3 days on a very interesting question, which I think, which is that if I lend money to a non-Jew, and he gives me a mashkon, a piece of collateral, and I want to use this piece of collateral until such time as he returns the money to me, do I have to tovel it in a mikvah or not? Right? This is the question. The Gemara has a suffik about it. It's a baya de lo ifshita. It's not, the Gemara doesn't come to a conclusion. Tosfos has an opinion on what you should do with it. That leads Tosfos into another discussion over, let's say I bring a vessel that is no longer usable to a non-Jew to fix, and now he's fixed it. Do I now have to tovel it again because he's fixed it or not? It leads Tosfos to the other question of, let's say I owe money to a non-Jew, so I give him a mashkon, and then I pay back the money, now he returns it to me, do I have to tovel it? This was 3-4 days of discussion, and one thing I can guarantee is not a single student in that class will ever get a piece of collateral from a non-Jew that they lent money to, nor will they ever give a piece of collateral to a non-Jew that they borrowed money to. And if they do, it's probably going to be their house, and no one's ever going to ask whether you have to tovel your house or not. And yet I spent all that time on that discussion, because it's a fascinating discussion. It has to do with question of ownership and how we define ownership, and whether we view the mashkon as something that I own or something that I'm borrowing, or something that I'm renting, or something that I'm leasing, and are there different levels of ownership, and what's the level of ownership of someone who fixes something? These are all really interesting and fascinating questions, but in terms of practicality, they have nothing. And yet, I spent 3 or 4 days while the concurrent halacha class probably learned how to tovel kelim, and they learned which kelim they have to tovel, and they learned how to make the bracha, and they learned, you know, what a kosher mikvah is, and they learned all these things that my students may know one day, but it'll all have to be on their own because they read a book later on. So was it worth it? Why is it worth it to still encourage Gemara when, A, it is obscure in terms of the issues that it discusses, and B, it's incredibly time-consuming with seemingly little results to offer in the end? This is the question. And again, these are questions that schools are dealing with and that Balabatim deal with. What should I do? Should I do Daf Yomi or should I do Mishnah Berurah Yomi? Should I go to the Gemara Shir or should I go to the Halacha Shir? Should I go to the Hashkafa Shir? These are all questions that people are asking. Rabbis are asking. I have, you know, a Shabbos HaGadol Drasha coming up. What should I teach? Should I teach Gemara and potentially risk having people, you know, fall asleep in the aisles? Or should I choose some sort of, you know, sexier topic that's going to, you know, be more inspiring to people? And if you're telling me that Gemara is primary, so then why is it so hard? Why is it so challenging? This is the question. This is the question that faces us whenever we learn Gemara. So Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal gives 4 different reasons to promote the study of Talmud. These are his four different reasons. And number one, he refers to, reason number one to learn Talmud is relation to the text. A quote for you from the article. He says, "It is the arena where raw material is analyzed and molded, with which bare bones are flesh, and information transmuted into knowledge. On every daf, one feels the freshness of virgin birth, the angular edge of rough terrain plowed and yet unplowed, the beck of meandering paths charted and yet uncharted." Now you know why I had to summarize the article. Every sentence is like that one. So what does he mean here? He actually refers to laws in the United States of America. We all know that, oh, we have a Bill of Rights. We all know we have freedom of press. We all know we have all of these things. How many of you have ever read the Federalist Papers, upon which numerous Supreme Court decisions have been based? an exceptional amount of Supreme Court, what? Okay, an exceptional amount of Supreme Court decisions have been made based on the Federalist Papers. How many of us have read the Constitution of the United States of America, the Bill of Rights? He says, there's something to be said when you have contact with the text, with the authoritative source, all of a sudden, the meaning of what it is that you do becomes that much more powerful. And there is no more authoritative source than the Talmud. So imagine the person who knows what to do when they go and tovel a dish in the mikvah, and they go and they tovel it, and they say, I know what to do. Then imagine the person who sat over that tosfos and understands that the entire requirement of tefillah is sourced in ownership. Okay, and then you start thinking, when did I become chayiv in tefillah on this item? I became chayiv the second I went into Bed Bath & Beyond and I paid the person and it became mine. I became chayiv in tefillah on this item. Okay, and now I'm going to the mikvah. And all of a sudden you understand that this ownership, right, that my ownership requires tahara. And you start thinking about yourself, about you have the power, your ownership, something amorphous like ownership, something defined by society like ownership, basically creates a demand for purity on this kli that didn't exist on it before. This all comes from a contact with the text. When you engage with the text, you engage, says, or Lichtenstein says, you engage with the angular edge of rough terrain plowed and yet unplowed, meandering paths of charted and yet uncharted. You understand, and because of the way the Gemara is reading, is written, you get the sense of, again, the meandering, of the experience of how law is created and formed and forged and molded. And all of these experiences emerge out of the contact with the text. And that is a value in and of itself that can't be undersold. That is reason number one. Reason number two that he gives, and it's kind of related, is relationship to Chazal. We were blessed as a religion that in the wake of the destruction of the Second Temple, we were blessed with exceptionally bold and exceptionally creative leadership. It started, you know, with the Rabbi Gamliel and the Rabbi Akivas and the Rabbi Yoshuas, and it descended into the Rebbe and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and then when you even get to Babylonia, you get Rav and Shmuel and Abayi and Rava. These individuals were fascinatingly independent thinkers and people who understood the power that law has over us. And Rav Lichtenstein says here, and I'm quoting, to open a Gemara is to enter into their Chazal overawing presence, to feel the force of their collective personality, and not as in historical critical mode in order to pass judgment on them, but so as to be irradiated and ennobled by them. It is to be exposed with a sense of intimacy, not only to their discourse, exegesis, aphorisms, and anecdotes, but to themselves, and at once engaging and magisterial, thoroughly human and yet overwhelming. On the textual plane, they are, in a real sense, the alpha and omega of halacha, both primal fount and ultimate authority. This is something we don't value enough. There's a beautiful, and Rilchenstein doesn't reference it, but I can't help but see the overlap in it. When Rav Soloveitchik talks about what it's like in his classroom, it was offhanded comments at a siyum. It's actually brought down in Reflections of the Rav, but you can also hear it on YU Torah. You can hear the actual speech, where he says that he walks into his classroom, and there's a difference of 50, 60 years between him and his students. And it seems an unfathomable gap until they open the Gemara, when all of a sudden they open the Gemara, and the personalities that are there somehow walk into the room with them, and this notion of generational gap disappears before their eyes. The Rambam walks in, Rava walks in, Abayi walks in, the Shach walks in. They're all there as if sitting around the same table in the same room, having this conversation together and experiencing this broad notion of Talmud Torah. And so one thing you gain from study of Gemara is that you you actually converse in a dialogue with Chazal. These were, you know, he says they're the Alpha and the Omega of Halacha. They are, you know, they were the ones who opened the doors to the Jewish people to be able to interpret Halacha. Before that, it was the priority of a small few, you know, the Sanhedrin, who got to decide it, and all of a sudden they open it up to all of us to be able to join in this interpretive method. And so Rav Lichtenstein says this is the opportunity that we have, and the only place to really have the authentic contact with those personalities. And you get really their personalities, because not only do you get their halachic positions and their outlandish questions, etc., but you get the stories about them and the conflicts between them, and you can learn so much from that content that it would be a shame to miss out on it. So those are first two reasons. Reason number one, we said, relation to the text. Reason number two, relation to the people behind the text. And now we get to reason number three. Starts with an interesting Rashi. Rashi in Bava Metzia, Daf Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph. Rashi, Dibra Matril Shalamdu Chachma. So he says, what is Chachma? What is wisdom? Svaras Ta'amei HaMishnah. The logic or the interpretation of the reasons for a Mishnah, for a straight out written halacha. Ulahavin Shaloyu Sosro Zueso Utamea Isser Veheter Vachio Vapater Vahuanikra Gemara. What is Gemara? Gemara is looking behind the halacha, psuka. What it is, this is what the halacha psuka says, this is what, you know, the straight out line in the Mishnah says, and Gemara is about digging past it. And that itself is a powerful experience. Doubling down on this, if you want to look to the major figures of the medieval world, so you go Rashi, then you go Rambam. The Rambam, Hilchos Tamei Torah, he talks about how one should split up his time for learning. So he says, V'chayav l'shalesha zman l'midaso. A person should split his study time into three. Shlish b'torah shebichsav. One-third you should study Torah, the Bible. Shlish b'torah shebal peh. One-third you should study oral law. Ushlish yavin v'yaskil acharis davar me'rishiso. V'yotzi davar midavar. And the third time, and all of a sudden the Rambam stops, he stops being Rambam. He stops being, you know, the this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do. He starts to wax a little bit philosophical on it. He says in the third, he says, Torah Shebichsav, study the written text. Torah Shebal Peh, the oral law, which seems to be the halachos psukos, what you should do. And then a third, you should be understanding, interpreting, from the beginning to the end. V'yotzi davar midavar. You should start try to produce one thing from another. V'damed davar ledavar. You should compare one thing to another. V'yavim b'mido shatora nidreshes bahem. And you should start using the different ways we interpret and when we draw halachos out of the Torah, you should start interpreting them. Ad sheyeda heyach hu ikara midos v'heyach yotzi ha'aser v'amuter. You should know that how they decide one thing is aser and another thing is muter. V'chayotzi bahem midvarim shelamad mipi hashmua. V'inyan zehu hanikra gemara. That's what Gemara is. Gemara is an experiential process. It's something where we're dialoguing, we're looking behind the text. Rav Lichtenstein said, a context in which an anecdote and proverb jostle with rigorous textual legal analysis, within which excitement of confrontation takes precedence over lucidity of exposition, discourse over conclusion, debate over resolution, such is the fabric of Gemara. Hence, it exudes vitality and imposes charge upon its students. When we discuss the reasons, when we discuss the internal details, when we discuss the give and take, when we focus less on the conclusion and more on the process, the laws themselves take on a vitality. A religion itself takes on a vitality that it didn't have before. And again, it's something to think about, and Rav Lichtenstein is going to get to this more fully in his next reasoning. Torah is not a pragmatic exercise. It's not there for me to know what to do, but it is an end in and of itself. The experience of the study of Torah is itself meaningful. And that's what he's talking about here, is appreciating that in and of itself. The Rambam says that the third of your time should be spent not coming to conclusions, but understanding how we came to conclusions, understanding how the process works. That itself is a form of service of Hashem that we don't often appreciate. So that's his third reasoning, is that there is a value in and of itself to understand what he calls the jostle of rigorous textual legal analysis. That in and of itself is powerful. And finally, the fourth reason, he builds off of two Mishnayos in Avos. The first one is in the, they're both in the third parak. The first one is the second Mishnah in the third parak. Rabbi Chanina ben Trajon Omer, Shnayim Shiryoshin ve'im b'neyim divrei Torah, harei zeh moshav leitzin. If two people sit around together and they don't study Torah together, that is basically a gathering of clowns. Shne'amar uv'moshav leitzin lo yashav. Aval shnayim shiyoshvin v'yesh b'neihem divrei Torah, shchina shruya b'neihem. When two people sit down and they study Torah together, so then the shchina itself, the presence of God, rests between them. Shne'amar az nidabru yirei Hashem, ish el reihu v'akshev Hashem v'yishma v'yikatev sefer zikaron lifanav v'yirei Hashem l'choshvei shemo. Ein li ela shnayim. I understand that's true of two people. Minayin shafilu echad shiyoshev osik b'torah. How do I know that even an individual who studies Torah, shakadosh baruch hu kovei alo tzchar, shenemar yeshiv badad v'idom kinatal alav, as it says in Eicha, he sits alone and in silence, and yet he gets rewarded for it. To study the Gemara is to have contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And again, this is getting back to this notion of Torah as avodah, as Torah as a form of service of God. When one studies Torah, one has contact with the divine. If you want to put it in starker terms, first we'll read the second Mishnah of Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Chalafta ben Dosa ish kfar Chananya Omer, asara shiyoshim me'oskim b'Torah. If you have 10, so then shchina shruya b'neihem. Shenemar Elohim nitzav ba'adas el. Uminayin afilu chamisha, how do I know even 5? V'agudaso al eretz yasada. Uminayin afilu shlosha, how do I know even 3? Shenemar bekever olim yishbot. Uminayin afilu shnayim, shenemar az nidabri yirei Hashem, ish al reyehu, v'akshev Hashem v'yishma. Uminayin afilu echad, shenemar b'chol makom asher azkir shemi avo elecha v'rachticha. Even one person. What was it that was going on when Moshe went up to Har Sinai? How long does it take God to say, do this or don't do this? But that's not what God and Moshe were speaking about. When God and Moshe were speaking, what was God giving Moshe? God was giving Moshe the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? He's not going to write the end of Devarim for another 40 years. This other stuff he could have written in a day. What are God and Moshe Rabbeinu discussing? They're discussing the intricacies, the details, the give and take, the thrust and parry of the Talmudic discussion. What they're discussing is how the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, is going to relate to the written law. They're discussing these things. So when you involve yourself in that type of experience, what are you doing? You are having the closest contact to the Shechina that one could possibly have. You're entering into the Holy of Holies. You're experiencing the divine in the greatest way one can experience it today. How should one, when one sits in Shir, the Gemara tells us, what should you be like? You should be like you're sitting at Har Sinai, like you're hearing the Torah directly, Pi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how you're supposed to be experiencing it. And he said, so where else are you going to be experiencing that, if not in the study of Gemara? To the extent that one is more deeply and intensely involved, insofar as one is being more fully charged, he's more powerfully engrossed by the encounter, and presumably worthier of divine grace. So ultimately, Rav Lichtenstein says, he believes, yes, there is a challenge to learning the Talmud. There is a challenge, there's an immense challenge. There's a linguistic challenge, there's an interpretive challenge, there are numerous challenges that stand before us. But why is it still nonetheless a worthwhile endeavor? So again, we started off this entire discussion by saying that ultimately the study of mitzvot is the basar, it's the meat of the meal that is the service of God, and in the study of Torah. But he says he gives 4 reasons for why it's a worthy pursuit. Number one, he says, because textual analysis is part of our understanding and enhances our experience. It creates an understanding of law that is deeper and more profound than normative understanding. Number two is there is value of having contact with the true molders of our contemporary religion, Chazal, in terms of the way they were able to open the doors of Torah Shebaal Peh to the rest of us, that if it wasn't for the Abayis and the Ravas and the Ravs and the Shmuels and the Ravashis and the Ravinas, if it wasn't for them, where would our Torah be? Right? Where would we have had this dialogue? And so it's worthwhile to have that contact with them. Number three, he says, is that Gemara is an avoda even in and of itself. It's a form of serving God. That it's a way of serving God with your intellect, that legal analysis that we often think of as obscure is in fact an expression of the vitality of our religious experience. And number four is that when one studies Torah, one has contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it's a dialogue, it's the clearest dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To put it in Rav Soloveitchik's terms, the Rav once said, he says, when I daven, it's a monologue. I talk to God, and God listens. He says, when I learn a Gemara, he says, I talk, God talks back, and we have a conversation. It's a dialogue. It's a privilege that doesn't exist in other areas. So when I'm able to do that, it's a much more powerful experience than I realize. So this is Rav Lichtenstein's article on why, even in this day and age when everyone needs to get things quickly, and even in this day and age when we like things to be chick-chock and we need everything to be in whatever it is, 22 characters or less, even then, they're still worthwhile to the experience of Talmud study, and Baruch Hashem, it seems to be a growing field, not a restricting or constricting field, and we're fulfilling the words of the Gemara. The Gemara says that one day stadiums, the Greek stadiums, would be filled with people to study Torah, and you know, every 7 years, we fill up two full stadiums of people who go for the Siyum HaShas. So certainly it seems like Gemara study is on the rise. Baruch Hashem for that, and God willing, it will continue to grow. Thanks for coming.